chapters 1 through 3, we looked at the heart and how our heart directs our lives. And so God, in his redemptive love, wants control of our hearts. And so he is working through others and through his word to help change our hearts and to get a hold of our hearts. And that's where the outgrowth of us being instruments to help in the lives of others and to serve there. Number 2 is ambassadors. And how we go about doing that is by representing his message, his methods, and his character to those that God brings into our lives. And then finally here, what we've spent the last about 2 weeks on is that by living as an ambassador, what that really means is that we are attempting to, with his help, live out the love of Christ. So we are to incarnate his love. We're seeking to know where we can help change others and where change is needed in their lives. And by being also faithful to speak the truth in love, and then finally there, assisting people to do what God has called them to do. This just is what that last point, number 3, is about there. We spent last week and the week before talking about how we can love others and what that means and how we go about doing that here as instruments. Today we're going to focus on the knowing aspect and how we go about knowing the person and knowing what the person is struggling with and how that can better then set us up to speak and then to do, which will be coming in the coming weeks here. If you would, go ahead and turn to Hebrews 4. Hebrews 4, what we're going to see, as has been the case in the other lessons, is that Christ is going to serve as our model here for gathering the data that we need to be able to address the right issues when it comes to serving as an instrument. And so Hebrews 4 will really focus on that. Let me just, before we get into this, stop for a moment and ask you some rhetorical questions, but maybe it will start getting your mind going. This will be a lesson in which I will ask for even more feedback, and you're going to have to think through some things, because now we're really getting into, what does this look like? Give me some real examples, because if the dots are not connected, this will be just theory and agreements and yes, but we'll never actually, when the opportunity presents itself, we may not necessarily be prepared, and so this will give you a chance to kind of prepare for it. But have you ever thought maybe that you knew someone until you were around them and they started telling a story to somebody else and you looked at them and were like, I never knew that about you? Or maybe you were the one that was telling a story and you start talking about this story, maybe something that you're going through or went through, and the person like cuts you off and says, I know about that, and then tries to finish the story for you, or a like situation, and you're like, no, that's not right at all. Those miscommunications and often those misunderstandings are outgrowths of the fact that we oftentimes, as we've said several times in this class, we don't get very deep in our conversations and in our relationships. And because we have those casual conversations, a lot of times the little bits and pieces of information that we know about somebody, their job, their family, who they're married to, who their children are, we think that we know somebody, or maybe more specifically, we think that we know the situations and the struggles that they're going through. And maybe even you know a little bit deeper because you come to Wednesday night and we share on Wednesday nights about our prayer requests. And so you hear a little bit more about maybe something that they're struggling with, but you don't really know their heart. And that comes through what we're going to talk about today, is that gathering data. And Christ, the data gatherer, I'm guessing that you've never heard this preached before. This is not Christ the Savior, Christ the Prophet, Christ the King, Christ the data gatherer. I've never heard this mentioned before or used this before, but it is good for what we're referring to today. So look there in Hebrews 4, 14 through 16. We are attempting to look at how Christ relates to us and how he works with us, so that we follow that pattern rather than what we just addressed, where often the result is misunderstandings or miscommunication, or we don't really actually get to know the person. And so what does that look like with Christ as our example? Hebrews 4, 14 through 16. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that has passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may attain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. The writer here is basically saying, you can come to Christ with confidence. Again, I'm speaking to a mature audience. You already know this. The person who you are working with may not know this, or may not even in their time of struggle or difficulty be thinking about this fact. And so that kind of begs the question then for that individual, why can we be so confident? And I'll be honest with you, in my struggle, sometimes I forget this. And when we struggle with something, is Christ the first person that we go to? If we remembered and knew this about Christ, that Christ relates to our struggles and has been tempted as we are, then we would probably go to him faster. And so the question is, why can we be so confident for his help? The first word there that's translated, another version has it as the word for sympathy that's used there, is it's a very strong word. It's a very strong Greek word. And it is basically, it means he has been touched with what you have been touched with. Or another way to put it is that he has been moved with what you have been moved with. He understands at a very deep level. This is not the, oh yeah, I've been through something like that. And you're like, no, that you don't really understand what I've been through. It goes beyond even that level of pity that we have for somebody. Oh, I can understand what you're going through. That must be very difficult. No, this is a much deeper word. This is an understanding that it doesn't matter what the situation or the circumstance is, Christ can relate to it because he has experienced something like this before. And that leads me to the next word that I want to look at there, the word that is translated for our infirmities, our weaknesses. It's another very strong word, almost an untranslatable word. It really means like an understanding of the human condition. So in other words, he understands the temptations that we face. He understands how difficult our relationships can be. He understands how to relate to the difficulties, whether that's something specific like being betrayed, suffering through pain, real pain, having disloyal friends, feeling alone. I mean, each of those words, you know God's word. Like, he faced those probably in the last like month of his life, just those things in the last month of his life. And before that as well, he didn't even have a place to rest his head, right? There were difficulties. Being constantly, having a group of people, a very influential group of people that's constantly trying to hunt you down and kill you. I'd say that those are some difficult situations that, and I can't relate to. And to say then that he can't relate to the situations that I'm going through or through that person that you're relating with go through, that makes it a little bit more me when I say to them, you can be confident to go to this individual. Because that sympathy he has is because he has gone through like situations and like circumstances. And so for us to, like Christ, if we're going to understand the people that he brings into our life, then we're going to need to make sure that we can't necessarily go through everything that they have experienced before. But as we talked about last week, what's important for you to be willing to tell your stories? Because of the difficulties that Christ has put you through, those things a lot of times, I have very rarely have I had somebody come into my life and me invest in and open up, and they open up with me in something deeper, and me be like, man, I can't really relate to that. It's very interesting how God brings into your life, and those people open up to you, and you're like, oh, I've gone through something like that before. That's God's providence. And so that's what we're talking about here. Probably the people that God's going to bring into your life, you're going to be able to relate to that person. Because God's not going to send you somebody that you have no capability of helping. He's going to send you somebody who you can be the instrument for. Now, you may be the trumpet, and you got to help out another person who's got to get good at the trumpet, but he's not going to send you an oboe player. You know what I'm saying? And so this allows us to connect more further with those people and really address the situation appropriately. And so let me talk about that. Be careful about making assumptions, as we referred to earlier here. I think a lot of times because we speak similar language to somebody, or we've gone through similar experiences, or you live in the same community, or you even go to the same church, that there is that familiarity with the person. And so we don't necessarily ask the questions that we should ask. And so today we're going to address those asking the right questions. And there is an overarching point that I would encourage you to think about is don't assume in cases, ask questions. So here of asking the right questions is where we're going to focus on today. Three principles that I would give to you here. We're not going to spend a lot of time on these because I want to get to the little bit more specific questions. But when it comes to when you start talking with somebody and start asking them the questions, please make sure that you don't assume that you know exactly what they're talking about once they start using words. I'm going to use this by an example here. The first one is when they start saying to you and opening up to you and you do start asking those questions, make sure that you ask them to define their terms. So let me give you just this example. I've heard of this happening before. Kirsten and I are familiar with this person. She more so than I am. But you may hear a situation where somebody says, my husband is abusing me. Well, that could be a lot of that could be a lot of different things. And that could be different things to a person. I mean, we're even talking like, are we talking like physical abuse? Are we talking emotional abuse? Are we talking verbal abuse? What are we talking about here? But if somebody just comes to you and says, this person's abusing me, and you say, oh, man, and then you start because you think you know maybe about the other person that's involved or whatever, you may come to the wrong conclusions and we may not be addressed the right thing. Well, ask them, by the way, kind of a follow-up to that, to clarify what they mean with a concrete real-life example. Okay, this person is abusing you. What clarify for me here. Like, what are you referring to with this? So ask them to clarify and then ask them to explain why they responded or why the situation, why it happened the way that it did or whatever. But make sure that you have them define their terms, clarify what they're meaning with real life examples, and then explain why they responded the way that they did in the examples that they've given to you. Because again, we may draw some wrong assumptions about, I can go back to this example in my head, and the person says, this person is verbally abusing me. Well, that could be a lot of things. They're using their words, but what does this actually look like? So make sure that we are not assuming things, that we're asking the right questions. And that leads me here to, okay, so let's talk about asking the right questions. This is extremely practical. I mean, this is very, very, very practical. So if you are one that takes notes, I would encourage you to write these main points down. And these are the things we're going to talk through here. Okay. These are the things we're going to talk through. So some of these, those of you who are older and you've worked with people, a lot of these you already know about. I would encourage you to think maybe about some of these, though. Like, I've heard of some of these, but some of the other ones, I was like, okay, that would help in me asking appropriate questions. The first one is one that I'm sure most of us know that this is a great place to start in, but make sure you're always asking open-ended questions. What's an example of this? Or what am I not trying to do? I don't want to ask a question, Jen, that's what? Yes or no, right? Okay, so let's just use an example here. But if you ask somebody, do you have a good marriage? And the person's answer is yes. Like, okay. That doesn't get very deep with things. So asking yes and no questions is not really going to get you the thoughts behind the answer. I don't know anything about what they're thinking about their marriage. If I ask a person, and they say no, like, I don't. That's very broad. That doesn't give me the thoughts. That doesn't help me even identify an entry gate like we talked about. Like, I'm not going to get very deep with that. So make sure that we always ask open-ended questions. So let me give you a chance with this. If you're talking to somebody and asking them, do you have a good marriage? And they say yes or no, that doesn't really matter. What would be a better open-ended question to ask in relationship to their marriage? Okay. What is your marriage like?
Good start. Tell me something about your relationship with your spouse.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Tell me something about your relationship with your spouse. All right, good.
How do you feel your marriage is going?
Okay, how do you feel your marriage is going? That's good. I would even say within this, you're getting different aspects. Those are not the same question three times. Those are vastly different questions, right? And this is where that's going to provide for you a lot more information and things to work with. You're almost wasting your time with, is your marriage good? Yes or no? Like, well, we just wasted 15 seconds of our lives. We can't get back. That was pointless, right? But if you go to these three questions, that could all of a sudden, I'm guessing each of those could turn into a 20-minute conversation, right? Okay, so good start there. All right, number two there, practical. Use a combination of survey and focus questions. Even if you haven't heard these terms before, you think about it. What's a survey question? What do you think a survey question is going to get you? If we're doing a survey of a book, what are we doing? Overview. It's going to give you an overview of things, right? It's basically going to allow us to scan various areas of a person's life. Survey questions, a lot of times, they reveal themes to us or patterns in a person's life. If I'm asking a survey question, it may take a little bit more, maybe a little bit more challenge here for us to come up with an example of this, but if I'm asking a survey question to somebody, I may end up coming upon a situation, let's go back to the marriage, where a wife or husband, whatever, is struggling in an aspect with their spouse. But because I ask a survey question, it actually shows me that that same individual is also struggling in a similar situation with their children and with their parents or with people at work. And now that allows me to see and gather information that shows me that there's a theme or a pattern going on here that's going to allow me to better address something that's going on in this person's life. So survey questions allow you to get those overarching and may end up allow you to be able to find or focus it or allow you to identify a bigger pattern. But you also need the focus questions so that you can look into one particular area of a person's life. Because I think probably some of you who have worked with individuals before, you even assume and think that you know what the problem is and it's one thing, and then what do you end up finding out? They've got this and because I ask a survey question, it's identifying this and this and this. And then you're ready to pass them off to the pastor because you're like, that's a lot of problems that person has, right? No. But you want to have the mix of survey and focus. Let me give you an example of this. So pretend like if you're standing at the end of a hallway for a hotel and you're looking down the hallway. So each of those doors is going to be able to reveal something when I open that door. When I open that door, I will just maybe scan and do a survey of what's going on, and I see that there's a bed in there and a chair, and you know I can see maybe this room's missing a TV or whatever, and that will give me some information. But I also want to have a focused study of, if I'm the person who owns that hotel and I want to make sure that everything in the room is right, I want to go in and inspect the bed to make sure that it's right and the pillows are put in place. And there's a focus as well as a survey, and the survey may give you some answers, but is it going to give you the information, all the information that a focused question or a focused study will do of what's going on there? Right? So you have a combination there of survey and focus questions. Number three, always remember that certain kinds of questions reveal certain kinds of information. Always remember that certain kinds of questions reveal certain kinds of information. And this is the point that we just had several minutes ago with our open-ended questions. Those were very different types of questions that you were answering or that you were asking. And because of that, they will yield different types of answers. But each of the information that is yielded in those answers is going to provide us some important information to help the person overall. So I love this. They basically spell it out for you here. But if I'm going to help this person, I should probably go through a list that, and this is a list that you are familiar with that some of you probably even learned in junior high. Very easy to remember, very easy to start with. How they start is easy, let me put it that way. But you've heard this. It really boils down to about five classes of questions that you can ask. So see if these don't sound familiar. What, how, why, how often, where, and when. Okay. Now, I do this with my students at school, and they like to write down every single one of those things, but I would encourage you not to write down every single one of those things. I would encourage you to write down the first one, and then let's dive into each of these here, okay? So, first one there, first question, the what. Now, the what is basic, that's like your most basic question that you can ask. It's not as bad as a yes-no question, but it's not going to get you a lot of information. But it's still important that you need to ask this question because it gives you the general information that's going to set up the rest of the conversation. So when I ask a person, what did you do? And the person responds to you, the husband responds to you and says, I talked to my wife. Okay. All right. That's a good start. But does that really uncover or reveal anything? No, but I need a good starting off point there. So the next one there, I'll ask them how. How did you talk to your wife? this is going to really reveal to you the desires. It's going to reveal to you how something was done. Not the desire, excuse me. It's going to just reveal to you how something was done. So when you ask the person, that same individual, that man, you say, okay, how did you talk to her? And he says, well, I yelled at her for 15 minutes. Well, that's a whole lot different than I talked to her. At the beginning, you're like, oh, okay, conversation. And then the second, how did you talk to her? Well, I yelled at her for 15 minutes. Like, oh, all right, okay. Those are. If I had stopped with the first one, I wouldn't have gotten information to really help me with anything. So, how? Third one, why? Now, this is going to identify the person's their desires, their purposes, their goals, their motivations. Why did you yell at her for so long? Well, I wanted to get my point across. Right? Oh, okay. Right? So, it's going to reveal to you some things that those first two aren't going to. Third one there. These questions, the how often and the where, these are going to reveal the themes. So, where did this happen? Well, it happened at the dinner table. It happened at the supper table. It often happens at the supper table. Oh, okay. End of a long work day, comes home, already stressed. Maybe your kids aren't like this. My kids are always crazy at a dinner table. They're in this thing now, by the way, where they're getting up and walking around the table. Please, sit down. Sit down. Sit down. Be long-suffering. Sit down. Okay? So I'm not yelling as fast as I used to. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. But the how often and where, okay, this is going to identify some themes. Oh, okay. This helps us better understand in these situations, this person responds this way and will give us some better information. And the last one there, when. What are the, this question reveals the order of the events that happen. Tell me exactly when you began to yell during supper. Well, I was in the middle of the chaos where my wife was asking me how my day was. My kids were annoying to me because they were getting up and walking around the table multiple times, et cetera, et cetera, right? So the point is, when you're interacting and asking the questions with somebody, it's important for you to ask the right questions, but there's a progression. Did you see the progression? I didn't start with when. I didn't start with the why. Well, why'd you do that? By the way, that's why we often start, where we often start. Why'd you do this? No. Okay, by getting all of those that information, because what would have been the problem if I started with the, even if I started with the how, but like the why especially. What if you had started with the why? What are you going to do? Potentially. If you start with the why. Anybody want to take a stab at it? Nobody wants to guess the wrong answer.
Maybe start lecturing them.
Okay, yes. You start lecturing them because you drew conclusions and you may not have all the information, right? Or maybe you might be right. Like some of what you're saying is right, but it hasn't set them up and helped them understand why this is happening. I don't know if you, I mean, get married if you're not already. And if you are, you get married for a long enough time. Can you see when problems are coming? Mm-hmm. Right? And just with that knowledge of having gone through it before, you know not to keep going because you know what's going to happen next. Right? And so even being able to understand situations like this can help you with the individual and saying to them, when this starts happening, we need to address this type of thing. You need to make sure that your heart is right about things, or you need to be preparing yourself and spending more time with God when you go and visit your family, because you know that if you don't, then this kind of thing happens, or whatever it is. Okay? I was not thinking of anybody. I'm sorry. I mean, I know I was getting a little bit too close there. All right? Getting a little bit too close. What I mean. So asking the right kind of questions can give you the right kind of information that then can help you to respond appropriately. I am guilty of this sometimes, but it's just natural for as you get older and as you encounter more people and more situations like this, we are quick to jump to the conclusions because we've seen this 10 times before, and let me give you the answer to your problem and fix the solution. And a lot of times the person's heart's not ready for that. They need to be led through this. They need to help see the progression. Because if you just try to give them the answer, what did we say in week one? What are you addressing on a road? You're addressing the potholes. You're not addressing the foundation underneath of it. And there will be no lasting change. This man's going to end up yelling at somebody. He's not going to yell at him at the dinner table. Where's he going to yell at him? The next place the kids are wild. I'm telling you where that is. That's at bedtime. Okay? It's going to be at bedtime. That's going to be the next place. And we're going to have the exact same problems, right? So to address the heart the right way, we need to ask the right questions. That's number three. Number four, so understand. Last one there. Ask a progressive line of questions in which each question is based on information uncovered in the previous question. And you saw this progression that we just went through, where I'm asking them the what. Then I'm asking them the next, and the next, and the next, and the next, for the reasons that we just said. It will help uncover the right information to you and will give you the amount of data. I know some of you, you're not, it's been a long time since you've been in school. Some of you maybe never even had to do this. I had to, for both of my last degrees, I had to get to go through a research class. And one of the major things that you talk about in research is, this is why we're all falling prey to everything that's said on social media, is because we know one friend who got the vaccine or who got the whatever and this happened to them. What is that called? That's called bad research. But you're all experts in whatever that one thing is because you knew one person. It's a small sample size, right? If I'm going to start helping a person and all I have is one piece of data, I'm not doing my job as a researcher. Therefore, my conclusions and the, by the way, at the end of a research paper, you always, a lot of, well, not always, but typically, you will give your suggestions based off the data that you found that will then help the solution or will give suggestions for further research that should be done or further steps that should be taken. If you're not asking the right questions, you're a bad researcher. What you're going to suggest or try to attempt to help the person with or address in their heart is not actually going to be the thing that needs to be addressed because you haven't asked the right questions and haven't gathered the right amount of data to understand what's going on in the person's life. So in the last few minutes here, I'm not going to ask you to do this with somebody and come back and report, but I was just talking, Bernard and I were talking about this yesterday. When you first start a class like this and the Sunday school teacher says, look for opportunities this week. You're like, man, I don't really have those kind of opportunities, but maybe God will bring somebody into my life. And then once you sit through a class like this, you're like, ooh, I have these opportunities presented to me literally every day, sometimes multiple times a day, but I haven't been aware enough to see that God has been bringing people into my life to be even asked the questions or to dig into their lives. So what I would encourage you to do is this week, when we have somebody that presents and comes to us and says, I'm struggling with this, or I'm going through this right now in my life, or they'll just tell you about a situation that they're going through. Don't come to conclusions, ask questions and ask the right questions that are needed for that situation. And it can simply start, what I have found is just simply starting with like those open-ended questions. And it may be on the moment asking God to show you what that question needs to be. But asking the open-ended questions that can then set you up for the what, the how, the when, the where, the how often, the et cetera, asking the right follow-up questions with it. But as I said, I think that you're going to find that there are more situations in your life where God is going to bring you people into your life than you're even aware of. And for some of us, we think that like, well, that's going to be somebody new because I don't really know anybody like this. And all of a sudden, he's going to be like, smack you upside the head and be like, you're married to him. Or they're your kids, or they're the person that you literally see every single day. And this is not about analyzing everybody like, let me see what's wrong with Mike here so I can help him out with this week, right? These are things, God puts these on a platter to us. And he says, what will you do with this that I've given to you, steward? Be an instrument this week in this person's life.